Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. At our paranormal afterlife, my mission is to explore evidence that we continue beyond physical death. These episodes encompass reincarnation, near-death experiences, spirit communication, deathbed visions, and other extraordinary phenomena. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week I'm talking to Carol Louis about her book, The Cosmology of Reincarnation and Rebirth, a brief history of reincarnation and the evolution of past life regression. Carol is certified in past life regression therapy with the Weiss Institute and Carol Bowman, and is certified master hypnotist with the HCH Institute. She is a medium and an author, is the director of the Center of Reincarnation and Evolution. She is the founder of the Reincarnation Symposium, and she offers private sessions, classes, workshops, and events to help others on their spiritual journey. Hi, Carol. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called The Cosmology of Reincarnation and Rebirth, A Brief History of Reincarnation and the Evolution of Past Life Regression Therapy. How did it all start for you?
It's been a long time in the making. When I began doing reincarnation research and wanting to know more about how it works, I had trouble finding resources. And I didn't know that I was going to end up writing this book, but I have a little bit of a researcher's mentality. So every time I would find something, I would kind of pigeonhole it into a file. And 30 some years later, I decided I'm going to write that book that I was looking for. And especially with the second part of the book, The Evolution of Past Life Regression Therapy, as a regression therapist, I have seen huge changes just in the last 10 years, and I felt like that needed to be brought to people's attention.
When you say you've seen huge changes, what are these changes?
If you can imagine that the early 30 years ago when I started looking at regression therapy, it was more like I would compare it to Newtonian physics. But now, the way that regression therapy is going, I would compare it to quantum physics, just to kind of give you an idea. It's much more expansive. It's not as linear as it used to be considered. And it's having a huge impact.
Is it one of those things where it's become, when you do a past life regression, there's lots more that could come into it than you might have thought about before? Oh, I'm talking about things might come in like spirit guides, life between lives, lives on other planets, things like that.
Exactly. And ancestors and people, you know, who have passed on. And I actually started out training in mediumship because the event that awakened me to all of this was my father's death. And I knew that he was at his funeral. I had seen ghosts all of my life, but I was afraid of them. But when it was my father, and I knew he was upset about something, so I wanted to get over my fear. And so that's how I actually began, was training as a medium. And what I have seen, and it's not just me doing this work, I've seen other regression therapists who also say that deceased loved ones or friends of the client come through in this altered state of consciousness. And so understanding how to navigate that territory is, to me, very much a part of the process.
So you had a what you say is a lifelong fear of ghosts. And then you started to communicate with your father's spirit.
Yes, and that was actually the first book that I wrote, Conversations with a Hungry Ghost. My father was Chinese. He was Buddhist. And so that's why I became interested in reincarnation. I wondered what his next incarnation was going to be. And so I wrote that book to tell the story about his funeral and some things that were going on around that. And then 20 some years at that point of conversations with him, showing me what his experience on the other side was.
When you're doing a past life regression, does your mediumship come into it as well? So while you're working with someone who's regressed to a past life, you're also getting, I don't know if you call it help or advice from spirits?
Yes, I think that's my superpower as a regression therapist, that as a medium and with psychic abilities, that I see, it's like I literally see where my client is going. Now, I don't let that interfere with my client's journey. I keep notes on the side, the left side of the page where I'm writing notes, and I keep that to myself. I, you know, just go with the client because I know their soul is the one guiding the journey. And my job as a medium and regression therapist is to listen, because our souls have such wisdom and take us to exactly where we need to go at that moment in time.
One of the things you say in the book, that you were surprised to find out that regression therapy started a lot earlier than you thought. How far back does it go?
Yes, several thousands of years. Now, in the book, I tried to stay with things that I could document. There's other information that I came across that infer that it's even older, but I tried to stay with things that I could document. And so the earliest that I could find documentation about was the sleep temples or dream temples in Egypt and Greece. And so that goes back 4,000 years ago.
When they were in those sleep temples, was it kind of like you would go there and there would be a priest or somebody like that who would guide you? Or is it more a kind of thing where you would go into it yourself?
It was very much guided by the priest or, you know, whoever it was. Sometimes I have fleeting memories of what that was like, but not enough detail. But the way that it was recorded was that a person would take you into a sleep chamber who would guide you. It sounds as if they guided you into a form of relaxation and an invocation to connect with the deities, you know, of that culture, and to have that connection with those beings help you understand your dreams and to dream more fully. And then you'd have the dream experience, and then when you came out of it, then you'd share the dream experience with the physical guide, and then you would process it. Well, that's a lot like what we do in regression therapy.
People have had belief in the afterlife and reincarnation for so many thousands of years. Just to speculate, where do you think that comes from? I suppose way back then there were children who remembered their past lives. You know, there's those dream places that you were talking about. Do you think that's kind of like that was their proof for them? This kid remembered a past life that can be verified.
Exactly. And that's the first part of the book when I talk about the history of reincarnation and rebirth, that it seems to come out of animism, shamanism, and ancestor worship. And the stories are that, and, you know, I've done a lot of research about my Chinese genealogy, and that has actually helped me in the research for this book. And one of the things that they talk about is the memories of children who had past life recall, and also near-death experiencers. So think about that. You're collecting stories, and you know, history was passed down through stories at that time. So imagine generation after generation of stories, and then somebody's smart enough to connect the dots and say, wait a minute, there's something going on here. Let's pay attention to this. And when they actually started writing, and I even talk about that in the early written records in China, in, you know, also Sumeria, that these things were then recorded thousands of years ago.
They have the beliefs of karma and dharma. That seems to have come up a long, long time ago as well. But how would you define what karma is?
Well, that's a good question. And I have a middle section in the book that talks about the differences between belief systems. So if you ask one culture what karma is, but you ask another culture what karma is, you're going to get different answers. And it's one of the reasons why I included a glossary in the book to help people navigate some of that stuff. So in the glossary, I define karma, going back to the Sanskrit word, the concept of action, word, or deed, and its effect or consequences. Now, that is open to interpretation. The way that I've defined karma is, think of it like a bank account, that when you do things that are not aligned with your soul, your higher self, that goes into the debit part of your bank account. When you do things that are aligned with your soul, then that goes into the deposits. And with my belief system, so the very last chapter of the book is my cosmology. And believe me, this is different from some cultures, but as I did the research, I realized I was really getting clear about what I believe about reincarnation. And so my cosmology is that karma is very compassionate. It's a system even greater than anything that we've ever imagined, and that there's no retribution, there's no eye for an eye, which some of the older belief systems hold on to still today. But I don't see that in the work that I've done. I just do not see that. I believe that our ultimate destiny, but we have free will to work out this destiny, is to understand that we come from the source, which is unconditional love.
And so what is dharma?
That's another good question. And dharma, again, if you talk to a Hindu versus a Jain versus a Buddhist, you're going to get three different answers. The way that my higher self said to me what dharma is our life purpose. When we're living in harmony with the divine, the source, what God, Tao, whatever you want to call it, then we're living our dharma. And, you know, to back up a little bit, when I first discovered all of this, and I had a traumatic childhood, so I was more interested in reincarnation from a therapeutic standpoint, because I wanted to heal the trauma that I had in my childhood. And what I discovered was a lot of that trauma was related not just to the karma that my birth family created, but also it was related to trauma from past lives. And so by healing that, it was like peeling the layers, but I like to use the analogy of an artichoke instead of an onion. By peeling each one of these layers of the trauma, I still had a little bit, you know, when you're eating an artichoke, you get a little bit of the heart of the artichoke on each leaf. And so I was getting a little nugget of the heart of my Dharma by healing. And so when I healed all of these layers and I got to the heart of who I am, then I really paved the way for me to live in my Dharma. And the last 8 years have been so magical because of that.
Do you feel that you have a grasp of what is actually happening with reincarnation? Or is it something like, for me, I would say that I'm constantly learning and there's always something new?
I would say that's an and also. I feel like I have a better grasp on it than I've ever had of anything in my life. And yet at the same time, I am completely open to everything new that comes at me, including letting go of reincarnation.
So you think there might be some information that could turn up and go, ah, it's not this reincarnation thing that we thought it was. It's something completely different.
I'm completely open to that. I don't want to box myself into a corner. I don't want, you know, my beliefs in reincarnation to become dogmatic. And for instance, in February, I had a quantum consciousness experience. I was the subject. And in that experience, I saw what I only know how to describe as the edge of infinity. Now, that to me is the universe niggling at me, saying, there's more. This is coming attractions.
With your research into religions, do you feel that any of them get really close to what reincarnation is, or they're all a bit away from it? They're quite off.
I feel like there's nuggets of truth in all of them, but it's a matter to discern what truth is. Now, I was raised, my mom was Caucasian, and she was a Southern Baptist. So we actually ran away from my father when I was 9 years old. That was part of the trauma that I went through. And my mother raised us as Christians. And yet the Christian faith did not answer all of the questions that I was having. And as it, you know, I hear that a lot with people. And when I began exploring this whole reincarnation stuff after the experience with my father, that was in 1990, then, you know, I had to reckon with, how does this measure up to what my mother taught me in the Christian church? And by that time, I had been doing meditation. And so I thought, you know, okay, even in the Bible, it says meditate on this, right? So I did, and I went into a deep meditation. I had a couple of Jesus experiences. And then I had this experience where Lilith came to me, and a lot of Christians don't know who Lilith is, but she came to me and she said, the spirit of truth will guide you. And I remembered that verse in the Bible, and I thought, that's what I need to focus my intention on. I was also studying, my early career was as an interior designer, and because of my Chinese background, I was interested in feng shui. I was one of the first people to jump on that bandwagon. And in the feng shui practice that I was studying, we were also looking at quantum physics. So in quantum physics, you may know that your intention affects any experiment that you're doing. So in that meditation where I heard about the spirit of truth will guide me, I thought, you know what? That's the best intention that I can put out to the universe and my higher self to say, okay, I'm not here to prove reincarnation. I'm not here to prove anything. But I just want to know truth.
Hi, Simon here. As you may know, I hold a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. Whether you're seeking to resolve personal issues or delve into your past lives, I'm here to guide you. Visit pastliveshypnosis.co.uk to book a free 20-minute consultation. Sessions are conveniently conducted over Zoom. And if you book your session within 24 hours of the consultation, you'll receive a 10% discount. So you talk about channelers in the book, and there's different ones there. How does channeling work? Do you have a good idea of that?
Yes, because when I began studying and developing my psi abilities, I studied with Sanaya Roman, and she has a book called Opening to Channel, and there's a course that goes along with it. And I was really actually, before I took that class, I was opposed to channeling. I happened to be in Naples, Florida at the time, and I knew several channelers, and I thought, you know, this is a little hocus pocus. But when I started studying with Sanaya Roman, and her channeling work was just different for me. It resonated. It felt like truth. But when I was taking the course, I was still a little skeptical until she came to the part where she said, you can be a conscious channel. And I knew right away, that's the type of channel that I would choose to be if I were going to be a channel. And I understood that it was going to be more rigorous of a training to be a conscious channel. Because, you know, as a trance channel, you go into a trance and you just let this stuff come through. But as a conscious channel, you are awake and conscious to the energy that is coming through you. It was so funny. At the time I was doing that, it was such a high energy that was coming through that I blew out two telephones, a microwave, and a television.
So you were actually channeling a spirit. And when you say consciously, is it almost like mediumship and that you relay what you're getting?
It's not exactly like mediumship, because in mediumship, the way I do mediumship, I'm an observer. I contact an entity. I have a conversation with them. And through conscious channeling, what I'm doing is I'm connecting with higher vibrational beings than one thinks of as, when you're connecting with entities through mediumship.
Okay, so hence the energy that came through that was so powerful.
That's right, yeah.
So you talk about Edgar Cayce in the book and Seth and Michael teachings. And they were all trance channels, weren't they, really? Was it like with Edgar Cayce, for him, it was like he was unconscious while the information was coming through. Was that right?
That's right. And when, you know, when he met, I think it was Albert Lemmer, Edgar Cayce didn't give reincarnation a thought until Lemmer's questions about reincarnation, and Cayce still wrestled with that until he listened to the recordings or the transcripts, and he realized there's something going on here. It took him a while to process those messages, and you know, I totally understand that. It takes all of us whatever it takes to process anything. And so his messages then took on a lot of information about reincarnation.
And do you find that the information that comes through the different channels from Seth and Michael and Edgar Cayce, do you think that they're all the same? They're all consistent, saying the same thing? Or or are there big differences?
I think there are differences. The clarity of the information that comes through seems to be related to how clear the channel is. So think of it. If you're using a coffee filter, a new coffee filter, you're going to get cleaner coffee. If you used a used coffee filter, the coffee's not going to be quite the same. And so I feel like that sometimes the channels were not as clear as they could be.
And do you resonate with them, so to speak? You hear all that information yourself and you feel, yeah, that all makes sense. Or are there any things that kind of stick out and think, oh, that I think that's way off?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there, I think it's not a clear answer. Some of the things I resonate with and some of the things I do not. And just because I don't resonate with something, that doesn't mean it's not truth. It's just that it may not feel like truth to me at the time. One of the things that I learned as in my training as a medium and psychic was to discern truth. That was one of the first things that I had to know the energy of. So when I listen to any channeled work, or actually anybody, when I'm listening to a client, when I'm listening to a speaker, I will get a signal in my body, oh yes, this is truth. Or I'll get another signal that says, no, this is not truth. And then there's a third signal that I get, which I call a wobble, which says to me, oh, there might be some truth here, but, and then that's when I have to ask better questions to find out what part of it is truth and what part I need to, let go of.
Okay, so kind of like a gut feeling then, or your intuition.
Yeah, that's how some people define it. But like I said, I've learned ways to actually hone into or tune into truth.
So with the channeling, they say like Seth speaks and you have Michael, but it wasn't like it was just one spirit called Seth or one spirit called Michael, was it? It was more like it was a group of entities. Yeah.
A collective, exactly. Yeah, and the same thing was true for Sanaya. She channeled a collective. She would do both trance channeling and conscious channeling, and that's I also feel like sometimes there's a very high entity that there's two high entities that I communicate with, and then there's more of a collective. I haven't, I just call them the masters when I feel their energy coming through to me.
And do you feel there's some kind of hierarchy on the other side, or everything's equal? They just have their own department, so to speak.
I hesitate using the word hierarchy because the connotations in human consciousness is to make it, good, better, best. At the soul level, there are those who are more advanced and those who are not as advanced, but it's not a competition. What I see is that everyone who has advanced is reaching back to the next person who's on the path and reaching forward to others who are further ahead than they are. It's more collaborative.
And I think that these groups of beings that are communicating, some of them have had human lives, but are there ones there that have never had a human life?
Yes. That's exciting too, to talk to those beings who have not had human lives. And that's one of the things that I love, being a medium and also a regression therapist. I'm sort of creating a cosmic map, if you will, just like we have maps of Earth. I'm trying to create a cosmic map of the cosmos, but I'm far from, you know, it's at the rudimentary stages.
I don't know if you've experienced this, but do you find you can tell which entities have not been incarnated by what they say or what their information is?
Yes, and I actually asked them, you know, again, feeling truth. When I ask a direct question, when I sense that they're not from this world and possibly have never incarnated on Earth, then I just ask, you know, I'm kind of direct about that. I ask and then I listen to or feel the answer. And if I get a wobble, then I'll reframe my question and try to get greater clarity about that. And so it's a process, but I'm very patient. I'm very persistent with the process. So I've been able to get good, clear answers on many things. And there's some things, you know, I feel like the things I'm not clear about yet or for some reason, it's not time for me to know that.
And have you ever had information come through that really surprised you?
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, this whole life has been such a surprise.
So what, is there one thing that really stands out for you?
I guess I'd have to say what all of the spirits that have communicated with me, one of the very first things that they say is that we're not dead. We are alive. And so, and the reason why that stands out for me is then, and one of the reasons why I wrote Cosmology is if they're alive, what does that look like? Where are they? I want to know more about that. So that's been like my, you know, my spiritual carrot dangling at me, making me want to know the answers.
If there are these spiritual beings who are coming through in the channeling and they have not had a life on Earth, do they say why not? Is it a thing that they could have if they wanted to, but they chose not to?
It's just where they are in their journey. You know, sometimes what there's a couple of things that go on. Sometimes they know that to keep their energy clearer, it's not for their highest good to incarnate, that they can do more work from their side. You know, like we think of as angels as being beneficent. And so if you think of those beings who have never incarnated as angelic beings, then that answers that question. Then there are others who they're just not ready to enter the earth plane. They want to, but they're not ready evolutionary wise to enter the earth plane. I think it's a great honor to be incarnated on Earth. It's different from the other systems.
Yeah, that's something I was going to just ask you, that they talk about how Earth could be a really tough school, but I feel like there are so many planets and so many galaxies in the universe. Surely there must be other tough schools that are like Earth.
Yeah, I definitely think there are others that are tougher than Earth. And the beautiful thing about Earth is the gift of free will. You know, imagine being on a planet where free will is not even an option. To me, that's got to be tougher than being on Earth.
And so have you regressed people to lives on other planets?
A few, mm-hmm.
And does that come up spontaneously? It's not like you're directing them.
That's right. I work a little bit differently, that I do not lead a person there. If they go there, then I'll follow along with them and, you know, take notes like crazy when they do. But I know some people, regression therapists, like to specifically go there. And, you know, when I work with a client, I ask them what is their intention. If that is their intention that they would like to go to an off-world from Earth place, then I have them clearly state that. But one of the things I learned in my training with Sanaya was to add to the intention whatever is for your highest good and greatest joy. So, for instance, if it's not for a person's highest good and greatest joy to go to that off-world place, then I trust that their soul will guide them to wherever they need to go. And if it is, then so be it. We'll go there.
Could you tell us about a planet that, you know, a client has gone to? I did a past life regression with somebody, and the planet they went to was pretty much all water, and that they lived a life as a being that was kind of like a dolphin or a whale.
But yeah.
Have you come across things like this?
Yeah, I have a colleague who has had those water world experiences, and my teacher and friend, Peter Smith, I think you've interviewed him. He has had that come up in many of his regressions with people. I have not had that, but I know when I saw that movie, I think it was called Arrival.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that one.
The octopus kind of beings. Boy, that felt real. And I haven't delved into that, but I'll share with you. I have memories of Andromeda, and I realized that my life there was so strongly imprinted on my consciousness that being on Earth was a little challenging for me, because in Andromeda, when I was there, we were much more evolved and collaborative and supportive of one another. So being in an Earth body, and especially, you know, being born to my parents who were volatile, I wasn't used to that energy, and it freaked me out. And you know, even to this day, when I'm around people who can go into this certain tone of voice, anger and shouting and what have you, it can unnerve me. But it was so fascinating. I had a regression with my first regression therapist, and before he was getting ready to leave Florida. And so I wanted to have one more regression with him before he did. During that regression, I got more memories about Andromeda, and I realized that the reason why I felt so uncomfortable on the Earth experience was because I had so many strong memories of Andromeda. But I was told again by the masters that, look, you chose this incarnating on Earth as a journey and experience. You're kind of a tourist here, so, you know, take notes and come back and report. And as I told Arthur, my regression therapist, about this, he got so excited and he wanted to know more about what it looked like. And I was trying to explain to him, yes, and we had four sons, and it stopped him in his tracks. And he went to get his pendulum. He was obviously asking questions, telepathically to the pendulum. It was going wild. And then he finally confessed to me that he has memories of Andromeda also. But what threw him was that I had memories of it with four sons, and his memory of it is with two sons.
You know, sometimes I wonder if the names that we give to these places in past lives are kind of placeholders in a way, because I hear people talk about previous lives in the Pleiades system or Orion and other places, but maybe it's not that star system at all. It's just a name that's useful to, you know, give.
Yes, and I've had the same thought, and I've also thought about what if those star constellations, planets, what have you, were given those names by the beings from those places to beings on Earth. You know, think about how mythology says there were gods, you know, Zeus and all of that, and you know, the Sumerians have their whole legions of gods, you know, from Zachariah Sitchin writes about that, the Anunnaki.
Yeah.
And what if those beings actually at you know, certain times visited our Earth and gave us those names of those planets? I mean, think about how astrology came about. How did these people on Earth know about these things, know about the layout of the planets? Those weren't so easily visible at that particular time. That's thousands of years ago. But what if they were given it by those extraterrestrials?
Yeah, because there's that group in Africa, isn't there? The Dogon? And they knew that there was a star system. I think it might have been Sirius. And they knew that it was a binary system hundreds of years ago. And that was only proved recently. And so how on earth could they know that?
How could they know that? And you know, the Easter Island. I mean, we've got them all over the globe. These structures that they defy human logic. So I think there's more to be revealed, you know, but I feel that human consciousness has to evolve before we're going to get more answers.
So, let's get back to talking about reincarnation and stuff. It's one of those conversations, isn't it? They just go take their own path sometimes.
It's all interrelated.
But I wanted to ask you about something that Seth said in the channeling, which you've put it in your book. He said, since all is simultaneous, your present beliefs can alter your past ones, whether from this life or a previous one, and you can restructure your reincarnational past. So it's kind of like saying that your soul is experiencing all of your past lives at the same time.
Yes. And I've had this experience. When I first read that in the Seth material, I didn't get it. It wasn't until I started having these quantum experiences, is what I call them, that I began understanding. And of course, you know, my first experience like that was in 2002. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute. I'm having an effect on that past life, and that past life is having an effect on me. So that's exactly what Seth is talking about. And I'm thinking, how can this possibly be? That's what I'm saying. I had to get out of linear thinking, the way that, you know, the writings 30 some years ago when I started this work were writing, saying it's one soul going from one body to another body to another body. And I don't think that way anymore.
So working with past life regression therapy, it's kind of suggesting that something from another one of your lives is affecting your current life negatively. That's why you need the therapy. But I wonder if the stuff that's coming through and affecting you negatively in this life, that's a glitch in the system. Something's gone wrong.
Yes.
Or is it actually on purpose?
I think it's both. The glitch is showing us the purpose. And also, it's not all about negative stuff. You know, there have been good things that we have done in other lives, and that those are imprinted on us also. That's like what I was talking about, the heart of the artichoke. And this happened to me over and over again, even as a young child. At 11, I wanted to be an architect, and I had skills that I had never been around an architect at 11 years old, but I had this vision, and I knew that I wanted to be an architect. And I started doing isometric perspectives. I just knew things that I did not know where it came from until many years later. And so good things come through also. So I think of past life regression therapy also as a sort of occupational therapy. You know, in occupational therapy, you're tuning into those places where you want to develop your skills. And so I use it for both.
And if we do past life regression therapy with somebody and we help them and we clear something so that things are better in this life, I've sometimes wondered if we're interfering and perhaps what we're clearing ultimately isn't helpful because the person's supposed to be going through that.
Well, if you're doing it right, that's not an issue. And when I say doing it right, you know, we, the facilitator, is not the one guiding the process. We're facilitating, and the person's soul is guiding them. So when we connect with that person, you know, on a soul level, sometimes I think regression therapists do it whether they realize it or not. I do it intentionally. And then we are assisting that person. You know, in regression therapy, we are empowering the person to discover, to use their free will. And they're going to take that information and do with it what they will. I always feel like whatever comes up is all in divine order. And, you know, that's kind of my mantra. Everything is in divine order.
We've talked about reincarnation and lives. What about the intermission period between lives? Have you learned much about that? Because as Michael Newton had those great books about the intermission space, but do you feel it all lines up?
I do. In fact, that's where I'm placing a lot of my research right now, is on the intermission period, or I call it the interlife period. And I really, if you've not read Dr. Joel Witten's book about the in-between lives, I think his is even more profound than Michael Newton's.
I haven't come across him. I'll definitely have to look that up.
Look that up. And he was actually working on a book before he died about specifically, I think Bardo was even in the title. He did not get to finish it before he passed. And I keep asking him on the other side, please channel that book through me, because I would really love to know more about, you know, I was so looking forward to reading that book.
And have you found that the description of that space between lives that comes through past life regression is the same as perhaps may come through channeling or through children's memories?
So there's no general consensus in my view that as many people as there are on this planet, there can be that many interpretations or mental constructs of the interlife experience. There are some similarities for sure, but the moment you try to lock it down into one thing, you are painting yourself into a corner.
Right, okay. It's like near-death experiences where the people have such different things happening with them.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, think about it. We are meant to experience our own unique journey on Earth. So, you know, it's not a cookie cutter thing.
And when you talk about, I don't know, communicating with the masters, would you say that's the same sort of space as people would call the Council of Elders?
I don't think of it that way. I don't know. The wording Council of Elders just doesn't resonate with me. I guess I'll put it that way. you know, like when you tune into a radio station, I don't like country music. The Council of Elders does not resonate with me with the same vibration as the Masters do.
With all these different things that are coming up in past life regression and these ideas of reincarnation, there's a list of things that I wanted to talk to you about briefly that you've put in the book. So yes. If we could go through them one by one, and I said briefly, we could probably do a whole hour on each one of these subjects, but there's parallel lives. So how would you define what they are?
Parallel lives for me are when the Oversoul says that, you know, let's try something different. Let's experiment with living a life as an entity in one area and also living a life as an entity in another area at the same time.
So you would have somebody, say you would have a life in the United States, and then there'd be somebody living in India, but it would be the same soul, and they're both alive at the same time.
And I think of them as stream of consciousness rather than soul. And I do that because the word soul is, again, it has so many connotations depending on what culture you're talking to. So I just have streamlined it with the terminology stream of consciousness that emanates out of the Oversoul energy. But yes, they can be two different, completely different entities. And I've had that experience of parallel lives where one life was, and actually there was an overlap that the life just before this one was experiencing a parallel life. And then one of those died and the other continued for a while, but then she died when I was a child. And, you know, but for a brief period of time, our lives overlapped or were continuous.
It's been great talking to you. The book's called The Cosmology of Reincarnation and Rebirth, A Brief History of Reincarnation and the Evolution of Past Life Regression Therapy. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
They can get that on Amazon. And I'm going to be talking about it at the Reincarnation Symposium in October. And I'll be also offering a journey into the interlife during the symposium.
And can you tell people your website?
Yes, it's very easy. CarolLouie.net, but my name is spelled CarolLouie.net.
Great. And I'll put the links in the show notes. And again, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for all your wonderful questions. I just love talking with you. I feel like we could talk for hours. And if you have any other questions after this program, then please do not hesitate to send them along to me, because the questions are like those spiritual carrots I was talking about.
Yeah, great. Okay. All right. And again, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. And have a wonderful day.
So this week I was talking to Carol Louie about her book, The Cosmology of Reincarnation and Rebirth, A Brief History of Reincarnation and the Evolution of Past Life Regression. And if you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday. And you can find it on almost every podcast app. I also have a tier in the Our Paranormal Afterlife Patreon campaign, where for $13.50 a month, you can get the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes every week, as well as the Our Paranormal Afterlife extended episodes. And including the UFO Podcast episodes, there are now more than 100 extended episodes available in the back catalogue. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife, or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And there is an Our Paranormal Afterlife Facebook group. If you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. And so the next thing I wanted to ask about was alternate realities.
I love that one. In fact, when I'm working with a client and their soul is guiding me to share.